Hi, I'm Bill Teeple, and I'm here with Alan Cobb and Donna Colby, and this is Icon Art Radio on KRUU LP FM 100.1 on your dial, and we're broadcasting from the Cultural District in the heart of Fairfield, Iowa, at Icon Gallery.
On the square.
On the square.
Be here or be square.
If you're within the listening range of our broadcast tower, which is about 20 feet beyond the edge of town, come on down. Otherwise, if you're listening somewhere around the globe as we stream out there, get on a plane and come to Fairfield. This is a happening place. You can also go to our website, Icon Art, icon-art.org, and all 80 shows that we've done are archived there, and you can listen to any of them.
Yeah, I think we're up to 82 now.
82 shows.
So what are we going to talk about now for the 83rd show?
Well, I wanted to talk about our trip to the Chicago Art Institute. I'm totally inspired by having taken my students to see world-class art in our region. We've talked forever about field trips, but I've got so much going on in town, we haven't done many field trips. But as with many of these things that have happened that are part of our ICON program, one person took it on and made it happen, and that was Susan Marcus. She organized last year's trip to the Des Moines Arts Center, so we got as far as Des Moines last year. And we all had so much fun going up to Des Moines, we did an overnighter to Chicago this year. And I am now committed to at least an annual trip to Chicago, to the Chicago Art Institute, because it is a gem. It's a world-class museum right in our region, and just a 4.5 hour drive, and you're standing in front of world famous masterpieces. And the reason that I say this is I know as a teacher that besides making art as much as you can, if you really want to learn art, if you really want to get somewhere with your art, rather than just beyond the hobby level, or even if you're a serious hobbyist, you need to do it. That's the first prerequisite. And the second thing is to find a teacher that you respect his eye and help him, and he will help you place your attention so that it's always a matter of the art of you having to figure it out. You've got to figure out how to do it and how to get across what you're trying to say. But if you've been trying to figure something out and there's a teacher ready to sort of point out how you can get over that hump and how you can figure that out, then the teacher can be really a help to you. So that's number two item, the teacher. Number three is the old master. All the masters that have gone before you can be your teachers. And at that point, usually, after you've been doing it for a while, focused and trying to understand it and figure it out, and that you've got a teacher that's helping place your attention to help you figure these things out, then the next step is to go and look at original art by the masters, because they will be your best teachers at that point. They will show you what it is that is true art content in person, and you'll understand why you're doing this in the first place and what it is to get a handle on that. They've got it, and they'll show you how they painted their paintings. So I took a group a few weekends ago, and we went through the progress from the Renaissance through the 16th, 17th, 18th centuries into the 19th century, and that turning point where we really launched into our modernist period. And it began really with the Renaissance. We started with the Renaissance, but there was a turning point in the mid-1800s with the advent of Impressionism and Post-Impressionism. That means Monet, Renoir, Van Gogh, Gauguin, and then moving into the big changes of the 20th century with Picasso and Matisse. We went through this whole progression of art from the Renaissance through the Impressionist and Post-Impressionist period into the all of 20th century art and we had a blast. The reason that I did that program was I wanted to take everyone to see the Impressionist masterpieces and post-Impressionist masterpieces of Monet and Renoir and Sisley and Pissarro and Picasso and Van Gogh and Gauguin. I don't know if I said that again, but Chagall and Matisse and Braque and all the great masters, Modigliani, they're all there. The reason we did that was I wanted to take everyone to see the masterpieces of these artists, but they're not there. This is what I'm trying to say. They're in Fort Worth, but I didn't know that.
Oh, no.
Because they're remodeling the space. And they're building a brand new, huge, modern wing on the south, towards the lake. So what we did was
above the floodplain,
I think above the floodplain.
Will they be expanding their collection then?
I don't know. They probably have a lot of modern, actually contemporary work that's not even up. Mm. So that's probably why they needed to add this. I would imagine they're going to add to their contemporary collection. And of course, they will be adding more and more contemporary art as the days go by and more contemporary art happens. Mm. But in the process, they're remodeling the Impressionist and Post-Impressionist areas. So all the ones that I wanted to see and show them, the really masterpieces, are not there. So we had a blast, though, looking at the larger picture. And it laid the foundation for being able to come back next year, which we will do, and see those masterpieces. But I gave them a much more basic foundation in being able to look at those paintings by setting it in the historical context of the quest for realism. Mm-hmm. Really, with the Renaissance, we were leaving the medieval period where we were mostly trying to describe the truths of the Bible, which has to do with reality as it's described in the Western Bible. But with the Renaissance, man began to be interested not only in the religious life, but also the outer life. And we began to actually give some validity to approaching the outer field of the senses, and that it was actually okay. In fact, it was this balance of inner and outer was the goal of life. And so in the Renaissance, we had a beautiful balance of inner and outer that I think produced some of the great masterpieces and the great cultural periods in our cultural history. So there was this suddenly a quest to know more about the outside, to understand it, and science as we know it in the West was given birth, and we began to explore the reality outside ourselves in the world. And this was reflected in science and was reflected in art. Art began to get, we began to understand the way the eyes see, and we began to paint very realistically the realistic world outside of us with converging lines to the vanishing point and all these, everything that makes a painting what we might call photographically realistic. And artists took that through the 16th and 17th, 18th centuries towards greater and greater realism. And by the 19th century, though, people could paint every little leaf perfectly, every little twinkle in the eye of the portraiture was very big, and so we had very realistic portraits being painted. But the Impressionists said, there's still a kind of unreal theatricality to all of this, that what I see before my eyes is a field of light. And I'm going to paint that field of light. I'm not going to worry so much about the details and getting all the edges perfectly right. I'm going to paint the light before my eyes. So these guys would go out and paint directly from nature and try to paint the field of the impression. That's what Impressionism came from. And that's named after a painting by Monet that he called Impression Sunset or something like that. And the critic picked up on that and called them the Impressionists. But that's what they were painting, the impression before their eyes. And what they felt and what we all feel today when we look at them is that these paintings capture more the reality of our experience than the very detailed things that have actually an unreal light about them. You know, they're kind of theatrical, and they're not, the details are there, but the sense of living reality is not there. So the Impressionists pushed us through a doorway into more the experience of the field of light, which is really a field of consciousness, that we're experiencing our own consciousness before our eyes. And that opened up the question of what is real and what is not, and that what we see is very much based on our own subjective consciousness. And so with Van Gogh and Gauguin and the post-impressionists, we began to see the selective eye, the selective awareness of the artist playing on the surface of the canvas. And you'll feel that with Van Gogh, that his vision is very much the way he saw things and felt things and was responding to color, and the dynamism of reality got onto that page. And Gauguin is a different, they were best friends, they painted together, but had a very different personality. And you'll see a different kind of puzzle piece of different kinds of colors and a different kind of awareness playing on that surface than that of Van Gogh. And then with the modernist period, not only was it, we found streams of discovery about reality happening all at once with the turn of the 20th century. You had the psychology, the birth of psychology, and interest in the whole inner domain of the mind of the thinker. You had the theory of relativity and Einstein saying that this is not a Newtonian, linear kind of logical kind of reality. It's a kind of one that loops back onto the self, happening in science. And in art, we had the subjective field beginning to play on the inner life of the artist beginning to be displayed on the surface of the canvas. And so we started having cubism based on multiple perspectives. You had surrealism based on the dream life of the artist. And then everything opened up into exploring all real possibilities that are available in the field of consciousness happening in the domain of art. So that's the progress. And so I took everybody to the museum. I laid out this kind of picture of what art's all about. And I think it lays the foundation for being able to approach modern art and contemporary art. Now we're going to go back to that turning point that I talked about, the Impressionists and the Post-Impressionists, next year, and look at those masterpieces. And we've decided we're going to do an annual trip to the Chicago Art Institute, and everyone out there in the listening audience is invited to come.
That would be great. Have thousands and thousands of people from Fairfield all go.
Well, I think we should have the party train to Chicago from Fairfield to see the Art Institute.
So what do you see as the transition, if any, from abstract expressionism to what I guess we're calling postmodern? Because it seems kind of abrupt.
Okay, well, actually, this is the next. Very good, you asked a good question.
Gee, thanks.
Abstract expressionism, I think, this is the torch of the cutting edge of where modernism was heading, passed from Paris to New York because of World War II. Some of the top minds and thinkers and artists in European culture sort of came to New York to get away from all of that that was going on in Europe. So this progress that I've been laying out towards some kind of end game was leading towards the discovery of reality. And we found that getting all the leaves right and the petals and the twinkle in the eye was one level of capturing reality. But then we began, as we penetrated deeper into reality, we found that reality is beyond, you know, the surface level of things. And so by the abstract expressionist period in the United States, and this is, we're talking about Rothko and Jackson Pollock and Franz Kline and de Kooning and the famous artists of the New York School, they had a hint. They weren't enlightened people, but they had some kind of a flash and cognition and an intellectual pursuit towards, and an emotional feeling pursuit towards some kind of like a concept that there's a unified field at the basis of all of this. And they were trying to give some expression to a unified field of energy at the basis of all of the mythology that emerges from that unified field, and then our everyday life that emerges from the mythological realm, that we might say the realm of the gods, where all of the stories of life and patterns of life are structured in the way the gods and the demigods interact and fluctuate. And then all of our lives are structured in those impulses. So our everyday life in 2008 in Fairfield, like that, our present day reality is structured in us being those living realities in these bodies. So they had some kind of a glimpse of the unified field out of which the whole of creation emerges. And they were attempting to give primary expression to these lines of force, the field itself and the emerging forces. This is really taking it towards the end game. So the solution, the final frontier, we might say, is the viewer's own cognition of himself and the realization that it's all nothing but self. And what that is. And this is the big it we talk about week after week in our discussions here at Icon Art Radio. So it was a kind of a path towards reality. What happened was you either had to get enlightened. This is kind of a metaphorical description that I give. So we're talking about 1960, about the time Maharishi came on the picture with a kind of systematic means of getting at the self. You either had to get enlightened at that point. These artists had to either get enlightened because of this long pursuit towards that. There was a pursuit towards truth. Mm-hmm. You either had to get it at that point, or this whole juggernaut of the entire of art history that was this moving train towards this end was going to smash against a wall. And you either had to be able to go through the wall, or you had to be part of the smashing. You had a choice, kind of. And we, so we who are kind of watching this thing happen, saw the splashing. And I would call the splashing and the splattering to be postmodernism. Okay. The entire juggernaut of the entire history of culture and art splattered in every which way. And then if you were a drop splattering that way, then you went there. And if you were a drop splattering this way, you went there. Or if you were lucky enough to pass through the wall, you had some idea of what reality really was all about. Then you could take a 180-degree turn from that foundation and truly make art. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we're at today.
Yeah.
This is the art of the 21st century. You're either going to be founded in wholeness, where you appreciate 100% of the inner value of life and 100% value of the outer field, those put together into a holistic movement. So the art movement of the 21st century is this movement.
Mm-hmm. So it's really not so much postmodern as post-splatter.
Well, that's what I'm calling it. And if you look at what's been going on in the art world and since the 60s, you'll see that like people are, they're either you got it or you're flailing around for meaning.
Well, it's that glorification of being different for the sake of being different that Donna was talking about a few shows back. You're just trying to create something that no one's ever seen before, because the spontaneous desire to get to the bottom of things or to see through the veil, if frustrated by the opacity of the veil, can only get glimpses of the other side through change, through surprise, through what's different, through the unexpected. And it's sort of like trying everything in the hopes that there's a trick to it and you'll finally stumble across it, when in fact there isn't a trick to it and you have to turn your attention to a different level.
So do you feel like more people gradually are getting through that wall?
Oh, I think we're at the turning point. I see with the entrance into the 21st century that we're getting beyond that. People are in various, we talked about, we have talked in the past about ideas whose time has come, coming up all over the globe, and with the art movements, who people discovering in the cave of their studio an idea that someone else is coming up with here, because everyone collectively gets on to something kind of together because we're so connected. And I feel that we're moving beyond this postmodern, post-splash period, and people are beginning to intuitively recognize when wholeness is beginning to happen in culture. Now, that's not talking about art. We're talking about when wholeness is beginning to happen in culture. And are gravitating and feeling the pull towards that. And I think that this is the transformation where I think we're at the beginning of the cusp. We're at the cusp of a new age of art that will be as dramatic as the change in the 20th century. And those of us who are seeing art in its old pattern, in the patterns we recognize as art, even with all this wild explorations of the 60s through the 2000, what did I start to say?
Those of us who are able to see through the veil a little bit and see the art as an expression of wholeness.
But I was saying that we could, that in the year 1900 or 1905, when all of the modernism sprang, that Picasso and all that, those of us who were familiar with the forms up to that point could never have imagined where it was headed. Mm. And I think that's where we're at today. I think trying to apply old patterns will not work. That we can't even imagine the wholeness that we're going to be living in culturally in this next, in the 21st century. Mm-hmm. And that we just have to feel our way there as artists, just as those guys felt their way into the modernist period towards a new abstraction that no one could even imagine in the 19th century.
Yeah.
So I'm feel like we're at a very exciting period. And it's really a matter of each and every one of us asking ourselves what this is all about. Because it only gets there from each individual artist deepening his quest towards this and his understanding of it. When we get together, like in a place like Fairfield, and we start to dialogue about it, where we can actually even talk about this. Because New York, you might think, is the center of the art world. And yet this particular nuance and this particular discovery is happening there, but it's not as easy to see because of the flash and the buzzer, all the flash and the buzzers and the whistles and the high production values that are so much the hallmark of postmodern art, which is in dominating the scene there.
Yeah.
So artists that were discovering new things sort of went outside the mainstream a little bit, but stayed connected with it so they didn't get provincial and get lost in some separatist thing. They stayed in touch with the new ideas, but they kept asking themselves what is beyond the new ideas. And so you get artists together trying to find the meaning within themselves and deepening their quest as artists, and you get us talking about this together, reflecting off of what seem to be the cutting edge ideas everywhere, and things can a new cultural mecca can come about. So
now I wanted to bring out a point too, because what actually I think is the significant factor in any new emergence of an art form is timelessness, which isn't really even about the future, but about something that's more universal than past, present, or future, and that the artists who have done that have often gone back out of their to some earlier time than their own, like Picasso studying African masks or things like that, or Matisse being inspired by old Japanese woodcuts and all of that. That this circles back to your original start of this show of the value of going to the great, see the great masters' works in art museums.
Right. And
that when you want to tap into something that's going to go beyond the present, it's good to circle back to the past as well.
Well, no, this is exactly what I'm saying. That when that the place that we want to look for the future is in the high points of the past. Mm. Therefore, let's get on the party train and go look at those paintings in Chicago, because it was there. Because these, each of those great people who have risen to the top of the heap, and we can see it more clearly from a distance, Rembrandt and Raphael and Da Vinci, all these great points from the past, it's there. They were taking vertical dives to the universal realm and bringing back gems. And that's what I had to do. I left off the contemporary world at one point, and I focused on where was it happening throughout the entire history of art, and what is it that's in those pieces that's different from everything else that everyone's doing. So yes, that's where you'll find the future, is in the timeless points that people could have brought up to us again and again throughout the entire history. And I might say that if we have, what do we got, a minute?
20 seconds.
20 seconds, okay. I think if you go back to like Rothko and some of those guys, you'll feel something deep that you don't feel if you look at some of the work from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Very highly produced, very fancy, but it's not deep like that.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.